When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, welcome in, everyone. Of course, it's Red Sox Beat here on CLNS Media, the leading online provider of audio and video coverage for your Boston Red Sox. At Red Sox CLNS is the coverage for the network. Don't forget to follow the new handle or the rebranded handle on Twitter. Our show is still Red Sox Beat Podcast on Facebook. Go to iTunes, do it, rate, review, subscribe. The team's hot right now, guys. They're hot. And you want to make sure that every time we pump up a new show, we go right to your phone. So definitely go on and subscribe as well. At CLNS Media is the network. Jess Thomas alongside Jared Scally. This is going to be the norm moving forward. If those of you who don't know, we never really formally announced this on this show, but Lauren did accept a job at the wonderful world of Nesson, being a content editor. So we're obviously really proud of her, full-time in the business, but that means she can no longer be on this show. Lovely conflict of interest and all that good stuff. So it is back to the good old days. Myself and Jess Thomas doing Red Sox Beat, two-man in game full-time. But no, we are very happy for Lauren, Jess, and obviously it's her career, and we have to accept that.
So I guess at this point, we just got to hope that people liked the show before, too.
Yeah, really. Whoever listened for Lauren, I promise it's going to be just as good without her. And she's going to retweet everything anyway, so like just stay tuned, and I'm hoping you guys all are here for the great coverage and the great content. And just Lauren aside, this team is still phenomenal. They're going to hopefully end April with 21 wins. They're the first team to 20 after beating the Rays today on Sunday, as after we record this show. So that's awesome. Going after the best start in franchise history in the first month, if they win tomorrow as well. So just a lot going right with this team, and even with the little bumps here and there, we obviously expected those. I still don't have many complaints right now because they're the best team. They're the best team in baseball.
That's the glorious thing about getting off to a 17-2 start. You can go, you know, 3-5 over an 8-game span and still have 20-7 record and still be better than everybody else. So that was great to start with. It's pretty exciting that it can be the best April ever in terms of franchise history, because, as you know, this is a rich history and a long time of history for this franchise. Mm-hmm. So to do that, it would be 19 wins in April, because as we know, the season started on March 29th. So they did get two wins in March as well. So 19 wins would be the best April ever. They're tied with it right now with 18. So we'll watch for that on Monday. And no, I'm not discouraged either, for the sole reason that five of the six games that the team had this week were one run games. Yeah, you know, some wins, some losses.
Oh yeah.
Right. So they were all close. It's not like they lost 10-2 for three straight games. So that's why I feel okay about it, because if you're going to lose, one run game is the closest way to do it. So it's not anything to fret about.
Yeah. Biggest thing why this team has really been winning is all April is the pitching. Offense has been hot and cold and starting to be a little bit cold lately. We'll talk about that. But right now, like, the biggest thing, obviously, Sale's being Sale, as advertised, as always. David Price is being David Price, advertised, as always, and hopefully he slumps out of it. But he's been off to in a rocky start. We'll get to him. But Rick Porcello right now, Jess, has been the guy that, you know, we talked about this, and I mentioned this, obviously, too, on the show. It's that Rick Porcello's third slot in the rotation is very important. If you want to be a dominant rotation, yeah, you have Erod. Pomeranz is there. But that third spot, Porcello, if he's even close to what he was when he won the Cy Young, then that's where this rotation is going to succeed, and you saw it. The team has won 25 straight games right now when Porcello has three runs or more. He's been flawless all year for the most part. A couple hiccups here and there, one off innings, but you know, stacking up the wins, looked good. He pitched again in this series, and just Rick Porcello. And I know you love you some Rick Porcello. This guy is the cog that going to help keep the rotation going, because if it's just Sale and Price, then there's no bridge to the guys at the bottom of the rotation. This guy right now, Rick Porcello, has really been what we expected him to be if healthy. And it seems like he's healthy. It seems like he's in the right mindset, and he's putting last year behind him.
Yeah, exactly. I love me all my Rick Porcello, and he's been a lot better than Price so far, and we'll get to Price too, but yeah. I mean, he's 4-0 with a 2.23 ERA. He finally got up his first home run today in six starts, and as we know, and me and Lauren talked about a lot last week, he led the league in home runs allowed last year with 38, and he'd given up zero through five starts, so that's a huge difference, and that's awesome, because, you know, that was what plagued him. That's why he gave up so many runs, is he gave up the long ball. So he's not doing that. His control is impeccable. He has four walks and 38 strikeouts, which is just fantastic. And I mean, really, he won Cy Young 2 years ago. He's been better this year so far. You know, he was 22-4 that year, but he's pitching even better. His control is better. He's given up less home runs because he still gave up a lot of home runs 2 years ago,
yep.
Even winning the Cy Young.
Yep.
So he is absolutely rolling. He's going deep into games. He's pitched four and a third innings already, which is the most on the team. So, I mean, this guy, I've been a huge fan since he got here, even with his two horrible seasons. So it's thrilling for me because, you know, you read a lot of people. I'm sure you read this too, even though I know you've liked him too. A lot of people were saying there's no way he's ever having a season like he did 2 years ago. That was a fluke. He's not that good. He's had a lot of good seasons in the majors. He's had a lot of 13-14 win seasons,
yep.
And then he won Cy Young, and now he's off to this start. I think this guy's better than people think he is.
Yeah, and I think it's more of, you know, over time he got better, and I think now there's less pressure on him here because he's the third guy in Detroit when they were winning. You know, he was the third guy, but, like, how consistent was Verlander and Scherzer, you know, you don't really know. And then I think here there's a lot less pressure because there's so much pressure on Sale and Price, especially Price. I think he can just show up and pitch, and at this point people expect him to do it, but at the same time they're not going to hammer as much as they will hammer David Price because that's just the way it's been.
Well, it's funny, too, with him because, like, if you win Cy Young 2 years ago, not as the ace, because as we know, he was not the ace 2 years ago, and now he's not the ace this year. How many guys have won the Cy Young twice? Not, I mean, obviously the season's very young here, but just
yeah. See, now you're just going to hand him the Cy Young, okay?
Hypothetically, saying he wins the Cy Young because if the season ended today, he'd be right up there, top candidate. So if he does happen to win two Cy Youngs out of 3 years, neither is the top starter or even necessarily the second starter. I bet that's never happened before. I mean, this guy's doing historic things.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see how he continues this, and I think it's very important that he does, because him being successful and him being able to go later into game, seventh, eighth innings, whatever you want to go, kind of go down that route, the nights he pitches saves bullpen arms, because if the Red Sox are serious about Chris Sale not pitching as much, right, not going in deep as game, saving him, if David Price isn't going to be 100% on his game every time, you don't know what you're going to get from Palmer, which I'll touch to in a minute because there's a topic there I want to get to. Erod's pitching okay, but, like, if you really want to save your top-end guys, it's very important that Rick Porcello goes seven innings, six, seven, even eight innings times, because this bullpen's going to get taxed, and we know the back end of this bullpen does have some problems.
And that was the best part about Porcello's Cy Young season, is that he always went six or more innings every time, almost. He had, like, one start that he didn't. And then last year, too, even though he didn't pitch as well, he still went deep into games every time, and he's doing the same thing again. And that's the reason that they've won 25 straight games with giving him three or more run support, because he doesn't give up leads. If
yep.
they get him a lead, he pitches deep into the game, and he goes on cruise control, and he doesn't give up runs. It happens every time. Someday people are going to realize that he does this and actually realize he's a legit pitcher. And I'm saying it because I want people to know this, because people still bash him, and it drives me insane.
And it seems to be, with the Rick Porcello MO, it's if I get down early, I'm screwed, because most of his bad innings are usually the first or second innings, usually the first. He's not great out the chute, but once he gets going, and if he has a lead, you're keeping the lead, like you're saying. It's just he has a hard time pitching from behind. And that's how he's really been his whole career. But this offense is good enough to pick him up. And, you know, we're looking at a guy who might get a lot of run support this year, because when the pitchers pitch well this year, it seems like the offense kind of has flown off of that and really fed off of that.
Well, the good news for him, too, is that when he does give up runs early, since he does go deep into games, it allows the offense to continue to get hits. You know, if they're able to back him up and get back into the game, they can still win that game because he doesn't give up runs after that. So, you know, just a little offense for him is all he needs.
Yeah, even if he gives up like two, three runs in the first inning, yeah, that's not good. That's terrible. We don't want that to happen. But if he stays in long enough and can stay consistent and level it out, and the offense scores two, three, four runs, then you're either at least in the run for a win or no decision, and now your late game pitching can hopefully help in the seventh, eighth, ninth innings, whatever have you. But if you suck the first 3-4 innings and your offense can't pick you up, then that's the recipe for disaster. And we're seeing that with Price. We're seeing that we saw that with Rick Porcello last year when he struggled at times. The earlier this offense picks him up, the better off he is. And it's all mental with Porcello, but at this point, whatever it takes, just get this guy to keep pitching the way he's pitching.
Right. I mean, it happened today. He gave up a couple of runs early, and then the offense got a couple of runs back, and he ended up getting a no decision and going deep into the game.
Exactly. So, Case in point.
It's exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
What
so
he did.
Rick Porcello, Cog, and then that three spot. But David Price, slotted at the two right now, hasn't been good. You know, 5 runs last start, 4 the start before that. Hasn't been great with 14 walks. Price and Pomeranz right now, no, it's obvious. They've been the two worst pitchers. I'll talk to Pomeranz in a second because there's a report out there that he might be tipping his pitches. And that's a question as well. But with David Price, were those early flashes just because of who he was playing against, because it was Tampa? Is this more of what we're going to see again this year? Or what is going on with David Price? Because I honestly think it's more of... he's going to work it out. He's going to pitch fine. He'll be a number 2 starter this year the way he's supposed to be. But I'm curious to see what you think.
Well, he ain't number 2 as long as Porcello's pitching like this. But, yeah, it's weird because he started off so well, and obviously everyone was ready to appoint him the David Price of old. Not of Red Sox old, but of earlier in his career
like
old.
Tampa Bay old.
Exactly. Because he had 2 good starts, and they were like, oh, this is the year, this is the year, he's back. And then, you know, he pitched the 1 inning against the Yankees, came out after 4 runs with his finger sensation, and now he's pitched 2 crappo games in a row. And, I mean, he pitched pretty well 2 good starts ago, I'll give him that, but he gave up the big 3-run homer that ended up losing the game, so he still lost. So that's on him, he gave up 4 runs. And then in this last start, this weekend against the Rays, gave up 5 runs in 5 innings and looked like crap. So... I don't know what to think because, like you said, his walks are high. He's got 14 walks, which is 6 more than anybody else in the team. That's a pretty big difference for just April.
Yep.
And, you know, he doesn't have as many strikeouts. He only has 28. Porcello is 38. Sale is 45. So he's not getting the strikeouts. And he has primarily been a strikeout pitcher. He's had a lot of strikeouts throughout his career. And he's given up the most runs, too, on the team. He's given up 14 earned runs. So his ERA is almost 4. So... I really thought he was going to rebound too, but ever since that Yankees game where he came out early, it's concerning. And I think he'll turn it around, but the walks do concern me because he's got half as many walks and strikeouts. That's not a good sign.
No.
That shows your command's not good.
Is there something there with this injury? Like, is it still, or is tingly fingers still lingering here, or is it just him being David Price? Because I honestly think there might be something to this. Because yeah, they claimed it was the cold, and obviously it would have had something to do with it. But like, is there a lingering after effect? Has he lost his command a little bit because of this? Is he still feeling because of this? Because I think there might be something there.
I mean, that's a good reason to not have good command is that you can't feel your fingers. If that is the actual
if you can't
case.
Feel the baseball, you can't really can throw it well.
Right. Exactly. So. I hope for his sake that that's what the problem is, that he's just not pitching like crap and doesn't know where he's locating the ball. But then the other question is it an elbow thing? You know, is this the same injury that he had and missed most of the season last year because of? So that's what I wonder, because is this an injury going to come back? Are we going to find out in a month that he's been pitching like crap because his elbow hurts again? But it makes you wonder, because in the past when his elbow's hurt, they've taken him out like immediately and been like, oh my God, and then he's like, okay, he's okay, or no, he's not okay, he's going on the DL. So I don't know, but there's 2 possible injuries, or maybe no injury. It's hard to know, but if he keeps pitching like this, then he's going to be more like a 4th or 5th starter on the team, not a 2nd.
I don't think it's an elbow.
It's not good.
I don't think it's an elbow only because he keeps pitching. Because they've
right.
been, like you said, they've been pretty cautious with his elbow. Like, oh, he's going to go on the 10-day DL, and he's out for 6 months. Like, it's just... Dave, if it was his elbow, he wouldn't be on the mound. It's either him just not being good, or it's his fingers lingering, which I almost want to think it's the latter because of how bad it like he claimed he felt. Like, he came out and said, I could not feel my fingers, and apparently that's a prolonged issue he's had in his career, which is ridiculous that the team didn't know about it. But give another month. I tell people all the time, you know, you start panicking with offense or pitching, give it 2 months, end of May, middle to end of May, and then if it's really that bad still, then we go, okay, great, let's burn David Price's jersey and never let him pitch again. Like, that's where it's at. Give it 2 months, especially where April can be a wild month. Weather-wise, it seems like we're finally turning here in the city as well. So the biggest thing for me is the offense, because now that the weather's warming up, I expect more home runs. I expect more long balls, and, you know, it's no coincidence, as the weather's warmed up, J.D. Martinez has warmed up. right? You know, there were some balls that he cranked in the cold weather that didn't go far, but, you know, he's been huge. He had that game-winning three-run bomb the other night, and, you know, he's starting to kind of become the hitter that we all expected. The rest of them have come down to earth a little bit here, and we'll talk about the catcher spot specifically because that's a concern for me. But overall, this offense is, I don't say sputtering because they've been fine, but J.D. Martinez is really starting to become the cog that we kind of expected, hitting around Hanley and those guys up in the top of the lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say sputtered either because, as we said, there were some close games. They're not scoring like 7 to 10 runs like they were. It's more like 2 to 5, so
which is still a sustainable model.
It is. And, you know, they won half the games. They were 3-3 this week, as we mentioned earlier. So that's okay. It's good to obviously have a couple of hot hitters, even when the team's not going good as a whole, and that has been JD. He's hitting .330 with 5 homers and a team-high 22 RBI at this point. Yes, he strikes out a lot. He has the most strikeouts on the team with 33, but sometimes power hitters strike out a lot. You see that a lot. But,
yeah, and I think you got with those strikeout numbers too, they're, I would say, a little inflated because you could tell he was uncomfortable at the plate for some reason at the beginning of the year. A lot of those were pretty much backlogged to the beginning of the year. So I think you're going to see those kind of even out a little bit. He will not strike out at the plate as much as Giancarlo Stanton will by any means. That guy strikes out like as many home runs as he hits. It's just ridiculous. But I think you're seeing why this team brought him here, and I think I'm giving Dave Dombrowski a lot of credit. I think people just like, oh, they got J.D. Martinez. Of course they did. But, like, he had to put some work in. It was a long process. It wasn't like they just snapped his fingers, and the next day free agency hit, he was here. Like, Dombrowski waited him out. Dombrowski didn't overpay, still got his guy, and now it looks like he's comfortable here. He likes his teammates, and it seems like he's becoming a silent leader in this clubhouse.
And he's having huge games. I mean, he had a 4-for-5 game recently. He was 4-for-4 today. Yep. So, I mean, he's getting, like, a ton of hits in a row. And then he'll go on streaks where he goes 0-for-7 and strikes out 4 times. But, I mean, you look at the overall numbers. .330, 22 RBI. I mean, it's 32 hits, most hits on the team. He's even got one more hit than Betts. So, I think that was a great signing. He's comfortable. And I've heard that he just, like, studies his swing endlessly. So I'm sure the strikeout numbers will go down because he'll look at the film, see why he's striking out, and then not do it as much. Like today, 4-for-4.
Yeah, he studied his swing before, too. I think that's kind of how he got so good. He basically self-taught himself so much. He basically was like a film addict like Tom Brady is. Like, it was literally he watched the film constantly, and that's why in that time in Arizona last year, that was all based off him studying himself. So if he wants to be a self-learner, then by all means. The one spot that I hate right now in the offense is the catching spot. There's nothing from Vasquez or Leon right now. And obviously, as I say this, Sandy Leon came up with a big hit today to win the game. But I'm concerned, but I'm not overwhelmingly like, oh no, what do we do? Because I am one to value defense over offense at this position more than anything. But my biggest question with the catcher spot is, you know, why is Alex Cora just right away dismissing the idea of, like, even against some bad teams, let Blake Swihart catch? Because we know he can hit the crap out of the ball. He still hits the ball. He kind of got screwed when the Red Sox put him in left field in the first place, but this guy's been playing everywhere but his position and as a catcher, and he's on this roster. Why not let him flutter in there a couple games here and there just to get kind of, like, wait, even if it's just to wake these other guys up and be like, hey, we do have somebody else here who wants to play. If you guys don't figure it out, he can hit.
Yeah, and I mean, he hasn't hit well yet. He's 3-for-20, but he's played so sparingly and so scattered at this point that it's hard to blame him for that. But Sandy Leon, 4-for-31, that's including his game-winning hit today. Vasquez is 13-for-71. He's hitting .183. Leon's .129. Swihart's .150. So they all got low averages. I don't know. Sandy's been great at times, and he obviously hit like crazy that time a couple of years ago. But is his defense worth his absolute lack of offense? I feel like he'd be better off with just Vasquez and Swihart, and obviously Vasquez isn't any either, but he's obviously a really good catcher. So interesting that he's fallen off after they gave him that contract. I hope that he can pull it back together, but I'm starting to wonder if Leon's worth his defense when you also have Swihart, who needs somewhere to play. Why not try him a catcher?
And his future really is determined by those two guys, right? Like, if he's going to be with the Red Sox, someone has to be bad. If not, Swihart's a prime trade candidate at the deadline, right? If they need something, and these two guys, they believe they're formidable enough to handle the duties behind the plate, Swihart might not be here after the trade deadline, which would be unfortunate because they basically have a guy who could do anything for you. If it was me, I would have let Vasquez and Swihart be the catching kind of tandem this year. But I think, you know, some guys on the staff have a nice relationship with Sandy, especially Rick Porcello, and I don't think they wanted to mess with that. But at the same time, if you think Vasquez is your guy, which you do, you paid him, you gave him an extension, then why not see what you have with Swihart?
And you had to know that Leon was going to fall off because his career numbers
were
like
Sandy Leon is not as good as the massive amounts of hits he had. Like, he was just playing it up. We all knew that. And now it's just like, okay, you could have traded that dude. You could have traded Sandy Leon and got a crap ton for him, way over value.
When he was hitting like 350.
He was hitting 350 with ding-dongs and RBIs, and it was everything.
Yeah.
And now it's always crap. Oh, now we're not going to trade. Now you're never going to get value for Sandy now.
No, you just have to get rid of him at this point. I mean, who's going to take a 129 hitter? Yes, he's a good catcher, but there's other good catchers in the league.
See, even if he heats up, like even if he got good again, like no one's going to go, oh, now we want him. Like, what was he now? Last time he was good. It's always just going to fall off again. Why am I going to trade for that guy?
Right, they're just going to look at his career 205 average and be like, nope.
Exactly. Yeah, no, it's absolutely stupid. So the catching spot's a concern. Again, end of May is when I'll really start criticizing because you get a couple months under the belt. And again, Vasquez is my guy, and I think he's your catcher. And like I said, I value defense a lot more at that position because it's more important as a catcher to be better defensively than offensively. If you can't stop a ball, you can't throw guys out. I don't care how well you can hit. You shouldn't be behind the plate. And Vasquez can do that. So I think, rightfully so, he is the guy. But I wouldn't hate to see Blake Swihart get some time behind the plate because Sandy Leon right now isn't – I know, again, he hit the game winner, but – Vasquez Swihart was always that tandem to me, and I'm surprised they haven't gone to that, but we'll kind of see over time. Last thing with the Red Sox when we go around the league, Drew Pomeranz, there's been a report out there, and I read it more because of Evan Drellick on NBC Sports Boston. Question of just the fact that has Drew Pomeranz been tipping his pitches? Don't want to go too deep into this because we don't know anything much yet, but the reason why they're saying this is because in his Friday night start, he threw 81 pitches, and most of them were curves. So usually with his curveball, we all know, he's a very big strikeout guy. He a lot of whiffs with his curveball, not one whiff that entire night. It looked like they were ready for the curveball. So the biggest question is he tipping pitches? We saw E-Rod have that problem and it didn't help him and they had to figure that out. They say they're going to go watch the tape. They're going to go pay close attention to it. But if this is happening, Jess, they need to nip it in the butt because we saw how long it took E-Rod to fix that problem, and it affected almost half the season, a lot of starts at least, because of that tipping issue.
Well, it's interesting because Pomeranz still has 11 strikeouts in his two starts, I guess just not with the curveball, according to that. So I hope he's tipping his pitches because if he's just pitching this crappy, that's obviously a concern because he's given up 11 hits and 7 runs, 3 of those being home runs in just his two starts. He's got a 7.27 ERA. Yeah. So I hope he's tipping his pitches because obviously he was a fantastic pitcher last year. He was 17-6 with a 3.32 ERA. So this guy can be huge for you, especially if Porcello's pitching this well. You got a dominant pitching rotation. So I hope that he is, and I hope they figure it out because I'd feel a lot better about that than just having him give up 7 runs in 2 starts and have there be nothing wrong. You know?
Tipping pitches is a lot easier to fix than like injury or mechanics or something like that, or just not pitching well. Like, it's a lot easier to fix tipping than what David Price has been doing. You know, it's just I'm hoping it's that, like you're saying, Jess. And I think, you know, what we saw him do last year, I don't think that was a fluke. I think that's why they brought him here in the first place, is because they knew he could do that. I think he's healthy. I don't think it's an injury thing. I believe this. When anything at all comes out about tipping pitches, I believe it, because who's going to lie about their tipping pitches? Like,
it makes the pitcher look bad. Why would you be like, oh, tipping pitches?
Oh, yeah, I think he's tipping his pitches. He's not hurt. Okay, that means the pitcher sucks, and you're just straight up like, you know what I mean? So, and with the E-Rod was doing it, it was the same thing. I'm like, he probably is. Good, that's fine, but, like, stop it.
Right.
Just
and
don't
he
do
was,
it.
So.
And he was, and that was the case. There's no way anyone would be stupid enough to lie. Yeah, I think he's tipping pitches. Okay, and then you're going to put him in the DL a week later because he was tipping his pitches? Like, any team would be stuck with their pants down if they were lying about tipping pitches, because there's no correlation. It's either he's tipping pitches and you fix it, but if you say he's tipping pitches and then put him on the DL 5 days later, you know it really wasn't the tipping of the pitches, he got hurt. They might say, oh, yeah, he got hurt today, we're going to put him on the DL. No, he was hurt a week ago. Don't lie about his tipping pitches.
Right. There's no point in making that an excuse if you don't have to.
It's so stupid.
It's just dumb.
It'd be so dumb. You know what's not dumb, though, Jess? Is draft.
Draft?
Draft. If you love fantasy baseball, then you need to try our new favorite app. It's definitely Draft, and it's fantasy baseball, but not like the other guys. On Draft, you play snake drafts with other people, just like in your season-long leagues. Draft lasts just for one night, and once you're done drafting, that's it, and no trades, no waiver wire, you set it and forget it. And the best part, of course, is you're playing for that cold, hard cash, and you're getting paid on the next day. Drafts start from just $1, so there's a draft for everyone. Jess and I use it. I actually did a draft the other day. Sweet, I was able to draft JD Martinez. It really helped me. I won a couple bucks thanks to JD. shouts out to the boy there at Fenway. But no, Jess, ever since we brought Draft on, I checked it out a little bit, and you know, I'm loving it. It's fast, it's easy, and they do. It's nice when guys are hurt or games get postponed. Whether it's that time of year, weather's a problem, they do let you know, and you can sub people out as well.
Yeah, it's awesome, and I noted this last week with Lauren as well. Like, if you happen to, you know, if you do it and you use the promo code that Jared's about to tell you about, and you play and you run out of money because you don't do as well as you wanted, they also have free drafts as well, where you don't pay anything and you don't get anything, but you can just draft and have fun with it. I've done a couple of those just for fun too, just because I'm like, I don't feel like spending the money right now, but I can do it for free and still have fun and mm-hmm. see if I can do well. So I like that they have the aspect of the free thing, because it's not like, well, if you don't want to spend the money, then you can't do it. You still can. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's nice too if you feel like you're in a rut on draft and you want to just kind of get the practice down, get the strategy down. It's a great way to do that without spending a dime as well. And then when you feel confident, throw a couple bucks in there and boom, you're a rich person. Look at that. Join us on Draft today. Of course, search Draft in your app store or play right from your computer on draft.com. And for a limited time only, here comes that promo code Jess was talking about. It's all Red Sox Beat listeners get a free entry into Real Money Baseball Draft when you make your first deposit. But you have to use that promo code, which is Red Sox Beat, all one word. That's right. Play a real money game for free just for using our promo code Red Sox Beat when you make your first deposit. Search Draft in your app store or go to draft.com and enter the promo code Red Sox Beat. So you can play one of those money games for free. It's like the best of both worlds. Test it out, get a feel for it, and if you win that one time with Red Sox Beat, you'll be able to get some cash as well. So definitely use that promo code. Go check out Draft. They're phenomenal. And moving on, you know, before we get out of here, we like to go around the league a little bit. Looking at the division, Jess, you know, as a whole, it's coming back to where we thought it was, right? Yankees are in second now. They're playing hot. They have 8 wins in a row. Orioles suck. They're terrible. They're garbage. I wouldn't be surprised if Machado's gone at the deadline, to be honest. Like, for a contender who might want him, maybe the Yankees trade for him and then they can convince him to sign. You know what I mean? So, which would be terrible for us, but Machado probably will not be there second half of the season. I'd be shocked. So they're playing poorly, but the two teams that are playing well are the Rays, who have won 8 straight, so they might not be terrible. It looks like the Orioles might be the cellar dwellers this year. But the Toronto Blue Jays, like, they are coming out of nowhere, and Jess, I'm intrigued to see what your take on this is, because with the roster they have, no one really expected this team to be as good as they were, say, a couple years ago when they were making that deep run, right? When they went to the ALCS, they were a couple games away from the World Series. They fell off, they lost Encarnacion, Joey Bats isn't there anymore, who was pretty overrated anyway, but now you have a team who's a little younger, but they're still playing well. They have some talent on this roster, and they were in second for a while. They might be right there with you and the Yankees the whole way through.
Yeah, I'm interested to see if they keep it up, because they kind of just came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden, after they beat the Red Sox the first game of that 3-game series this week, they were only like 2.5 games behind the Sox. Yep. They've lost a couple since. The Sox beat them twice, obviously, and now they're down to 15-12. But I mean, they seem to really figure something out and be rolling there for a while. So I'm really interested to see if they can keep it up, because obviously people don't expect them to. People didn't necessarily expect them to be there in the first place. But, I mean, they played close competitive games against Boston. All 3 games were one-run games. So I am fascinated, especially because the Sox will be playing them a lot of times, as they do with all division opponents. So I'm fascinated to see if they can keep this up and stick around with the Sox and Yankees. And then the Rays, too, I'm interested, because obviously the Sox beat them 6 out of the first 7 games and put them in a real deep hole real fast. And then the Rays went on and lost a couple more games, and they were like 3-12 or whatever they were at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then up until today, where the Sox came back and won 4-3, the Rays had won 8 games in a row, and they beat the Sox 2 out of 3. So maybe they're not the doormats that people thought they were at the beginning of the season. I mean, their bullpen day thing's kind of working pretty well, and they've got a couple guys that have started well, and their offense doesn't seem to be terrible. Denard Span's playing really well. with his gray beard and all. So
right.
I like that they're doing something, because people just assume they were terrible because the Sox beat them a bunch at the beginning, and now they're right back in it. And I read that they are the first team in Major League history to have an 8-game losing streak and an 8-game winning streak before May 1st.
It's crazy.
Think about that, doesn't happen much. That's wild.
Yeah, it's a weird situation. And then you look at the Yankees now, Jess. They are 2.5 games back of the Sox. We go to New York May 8th, 9th, and 10th. So we're playing the Bronx Bombers again after our series with Kansas City and Texas, which should be two pretty favorable matchups for the Red Sox.
They're both terrible.
So going into that Yankee series, we see how the Yankees are playing. They're 9-1 in their last 10 games here. So is this the Yankees team now? Are they figuring it out? Are they back to where we expected? Or is this something that they're catching a hot streak? Because this is who we thought. And Didi Gregorius, who has been their best player. They can't spell their own player's name right on their promotion night. They spelled Gregorius wrong, which is hilarious.
That is great.
But he has been their best player. Is this as advertised now for the Yanks, or what's going on there now? Because they are winning games now.
Well, it's what people thought. I mean, they took care of the Angels. They won the first two, and they're ahead right now during recording. And they swept the Twins in 4 games and beat the Blue Jays for 2. So I like to see them play a couple more tough teams, like maybe Houston, teams like that. Because, as you know, I'm not going to give the Yankees any more credit than I have to. So yeah. I'm going to say they're on a little hot streak here, and they're going to lose a little bit and fall a little back down. But I hate that they've won 8 in a row, because I was really enjoying when they were losing.
Seriously, I think we all were. And you look at the Red Sox, too. You know, you come off the Angels series, you lose 2 out of 3 to Oakland. Then you come back, bounce back against a hot team in Toronto, and then you lose 2 out of 3 to the terrible Tampa Bay Rays, even though they've been playing phenomenal as of late, so you catch them at a bad time. You have 3 games against Kansas City and 4 against Texas. You expect to kind of hopefully have some separation here in this division once you get to that Yankees series. That's the biggest thing for me in the division is that. And then you go to the AL Central, and just everyone is terrible. And I know we wanted to talk about this just because of, like Jess, the teams are bad, and whoever wins this division, it's going to be in the 80s probably for wins. It's not going to be pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it's embarrassing, even though it's
Cleveland,
only a month.
Like Cleveland, too. Like, they're 14-12.
They've really not played well.
No.
They've been very average. They've had horrible offense. They've only scored 95 runs, which is not much. Red Sox, for comparison, have scored 149, which, if you can't add, is a 54 run difference. So Cleveland's at first at 14-12, and then the Tigers are second at 11-15. The Twins, after getting 4 games swept by the Yankees, are 9-14. White Sox are 8-18, and those Kansas City Royals we're about to see tomorrow are 7-20. That's embarrassing to me, because it's like when your entire division is that bad, it's just like it sticks out so much, because you always have at least like 2, maybe 3 teams that are at least decent. But like the second place team is 4 games under 500. That's pathetic. So
yeah.
It's embarrassing for the division. It's embarrassing for the league that they're all that bad. And I don't know if we expected all those teams to be that bad. I think the Twins are a surprise. I know the Tigers weren't supposed to be great, but 11-15 is pretty average. And then, like you said, the Indians, who everyone expected to be good, is barely above 500, and they can't seem to hit anything. So I think it's pathetic.
Two other things I want to ask, and go to the NL real quick before we get out of here, Jess, because I look at the NL, and the one big shocker to me is the Dodgers, right?
Yeah.
They're 12-15, 7 games back of those wonderful, wonderful Torey Lovullo-led Arizona Diamondbacks. Love them, who are 19-8. So the Dodgers are not doing well. The Pirates are off to a hot start. And of all teams, the Phillies and the Braves both are 16-11, only a game and a half back of the Mets. So let's start with those guys, Phillies and Braves. What is going on? The Phillies aren't supposed to be this good. I know they got Jake Arrieta, and I know they've been bad for a while, but this seems pretty sustainable right now, what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, all of a sudden, like 2 weeks in, people are starting to talk about the Phillies like as like a good team and a team that should be like reckoned with. And I'm like, the Phillies? And I looked at their record, and they were like 70 games over 500. And I was like, okay, maybe so. I'm 16-11. They've, you know, 126 runs. They seem to have a pretty good offense. They play well at home. They're 11-5 at home. And they're playing a tough division, as you said. The Mets are 17-9, and the Braves are 16-11 also. So the Nationals are 12-16 of all teams. So they're playing some good competition as well. So I like seeing teams that people think are going to be crappy when they're actually good. And same with the Braves, 16-11. So I'm interested to see if they can keep it up, because, you know, it happens sometimes where teams are really good in April and then they fall apart. So that could happen. But as of right now, I mean, three teams with 16, 16, and 17 wins, that seems like the division to be looking at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. And then just touch on the Dodgers real quick, and then we'll get out of here for the week. It seems to me, Jess, by what I'm reading and what I've seen with the Dodgers, because they're terrible right now, and at least in the Dodgers' eyes, they're just not trying. Like, Cody Bellinger was pulled today for not hustling against the Giants. Like, he just pulled because he didn't hustle. There really was no spark against the Giants. And the Giants aren't a bad team. I think they have a roster, and once they get their pitching healthy and back, they could be a formidable team this year, right? So it is an even numbered year. So what do you make of the Dodgers situation? Are they bored? Are they not trying because they just think they're going to get handed to them? This team is a lot better than their, at least talent-wise, than their record is, but it seems to me that just, like, there is no energy, there's no spark, there's no leadership, and guys are getting pulled from not even hustling.
Yeah, it's like they seem, like, content to have all those wins last year and, you know, and get to the World Series. So I'm surprised they pitched Bellinger for not hustling, but, I mean, he leads their team in average with .291. So clearly they're not getting much in the way of offense. Yasmani Grandal leads in home runs with .400. I mean, what's going on there? So, yeah, I'd be concerned if I were them, because you're not going to get a division handed to you, as you said, because the Diamondbacks are 19-8. And you just lost 3 out of 4 to the Giants. If you get off to a really bad start, that can last for a long time. So Nationals and Dodgers, 12-16 and 12-15, both in fourth place. Those are supposed to be two of the best teams in the league, according to prognosticators. So I love our early season stuff. I know it's a month, but I like seeing how the stuff unfolds. Because as you said, after May's over, after 2 months, if this stuff's still happening, might be time to start getting concerned about it.
Exactly. All right, before we get out of here, let's just predict the week real quick, Jess, here. 3 at home against Kansas City, looking to have the best start in franchise history, and first team to 21 wins if they win on Monday, April 30th. And then on the road it goes, I'm on the road for like a week or so.
More. Week and a half.
Week and a half, yeah. 4 against Texas, and we'll talk, and then the Yankees start the week after. So, 3 against Kansas City at home, 4 against Texas on the road. Let's start the Kansas City series, Jess. You have Erod, Sale, and Pomeranz slated to start those 3 games. Wednesday's 1 o'clock afternoon start. So, what do you make of this series, and what's the old prediction?
Well, I think this is a perfect series to get back in the swing of things. You know, 3-3 week this week was obviously a lot worse than they've done the rest of the season, because they're 20-7. So, perfect series, a nice home series to get back into the swing of things against a crapo team. So, 100% sweep. I'd be shocked if it didn't happen, because Kansas City's 7-20.
Yeah,
that means something.
I'm agreeing with Kansas City's sweep. They're home, which is even better, right? Erod's been phenomenal. Sale, and then I think this is a good start in the afternoon for Pomeranz to kind of figure it out. Good after kind of watch the film, see if he's tipping. It's a good lineup now with the lack of offense they have to figure it out. So I think that'll be a good start for Pomeranz. Sweep there. Then you go 4 against Texas, who also is garbage. I'm saying sweep here, Jess.
You're going 7-0.
You have Price, Porcello. But look at the starters you have against Texas. It's Price, it's Porcello, it's Erod, and it's Sale.
And Sale. Yeah, that's true.
So Pomeranz for me is the wild card because of the tipping and because of other situations he might not be ready to go 100% yet. I trust those other 4 guys, even David Price, to beat the Texas Rangers, the way the Texas Rangers are playing. And that's the way I look at it. Offense aside, I trust those guys to take care of the lineup.
All right, fair enough. I'm interested that Cole Hamels is only 1-4 this year for the Rangers. That's something to look at. I'm going 3 out of 4. It's hard to sweep a 4-game series, especially on the road. I know Texas is not good. They have a bad record. They're last in their division. So a sweep wouldn't surprise me, and a 7-0 week going 27-7 would be it would shut everybody up who was starting to doubt them after this week. So it'd be good for the team's morale and for people to stop talking about them. But I got 6-1. That's still good. I'll take 26-8. That's a darn good record. So, it's a great week to take advantage of subpar opponents. So I am going to look forward to it, and it's going to be fun.
Cole Hamels has a 4.41 ERA, 39 strikeouts, 1.38 WHIP, and it looks like he hasn't gotten. Out of, well, he got past 6th inning a couple times, only getting like an out in the 7th. So it's been 5th and 6th inning outings for him, throwing a good amount of pitches. 107, 106, 80s, and 90s for not getting into the seventh inning. So,
because he should be their best pitcher in theory.
Oh, in theory,
but,
yes. But he's not.
Clearly, that's
at
not.
The moment. So, seems like it might be a command issue, throwing a lot of pitches, not getting deep in games, and hopefully the Red Sox can take advantage of that. So, there you go. I have him going undefeated, 7-0, baby, going into the Yankee series. Just has him going 6-1. Either way, not a bad week. And a good week to take advantage of. I know it's early, and I say it all the time, but this is a big week to kind of take advantage of, get back, right the ship here, get into a little bit of a win streak, get the offense going, and ride into New York on a high-power offense, because that series in New York is going to be fun. Both these teams starting to play well again off of what happened to Fenway. Yankees fans are relentless, we know, so it'll be some fun over there in New York. So we'll leave it at that. We'll be back next week. Again, shout out to Lauren. We love her. She's going bigger and better things at Nesson, being full-time in the gig, so... For Jess Thomas and Jared Scali, kicking it old school here. It's been Red Sox Beat here on CLNS Media.